Wednesday, July 7th, 2410. 21 degrees 12 minutes north, 158 degrees 7 minutes west. Pacific Ocean, Earth. Corwin Ravenhair stopped the Zodiac when his Omni-Tool told him they had reached the correct coordinates, then listened carefully as the swish of the inflatable through the water died away to silence. He heard nothing, felt nothing, other than the gentle swell of the ocean. They were far enough from land now that surf wasn't an issue, though in some part of his mind he couldn't shake the impression that he could still feel it looming behind them. Turning to the other person in the boat, he asked, "Anything?" Iona sat quietly for a moment, as if she, too, were listening for something. Then she shook her head and replied, "I'm not detecting anything. My scan range is currently limited," she added, a very faintly apologetic tone creeping into her voice. "Hmm," Corwin not really replied. He looked around, saw nothing but the near-flat gray of a just-pre-dawn sea, and then said, "Well, it wouldn't be my first choice of time or place to do something as obvious as this is probably going to be, but..." Then, shrugging, he rose to his feet and went on, "Let's get to it, shall we?" Iona stood as well, effortlessly balancing in the faintly rolling craft, and stood facing him, her face perfectly composed. Corwin gazed thoughtfully down at her for a few moments. He had little choice in the matter, given that he stood more than a head taller. Then closed his eyes and raised his left hand, touching a fingertip to the silver cuff earring he wore. The runic engraving on that earring glowed at his touch, dimly at first, then more brightly. The brand on his forehead glowed with it, and as the light brightened, its shape changed, the simple circle with a dot in the center becoming two concentric rings, linked and slightly overspread by three equidistant lines, a bit like a gun sight. He wasn't breaking the seal that kept most of his divine power in check for Midgard's sake. Rather, he was dialing it momentarily back, so as to access more of that power for this one specific purpose. Placing his hands on Iona's slim shoulders, he opened his eyes, looked straight into hers, and began to speak, his voice low, but charged with that fresh infusion of power. "Fallen warrior who sleeps in this place, cut down in defeat by an ungracious victor, hear me." Off to the east, the dawn broke, the first diamond arc of the sun springing into sight and spreading its orange rays across the surface of the sea. As the light fell across their faces, Corwin smiled slightly and went on, his voice gaining strength in time with the brightening of the sky. "Wake from thy dreamless slumber. Rest thyself from the slime of the depths and the depth of the ages. Drag thyself from the cold and the dark, and taste again of warm air and sunlight. I am Corwin of the Raven Hair, watcher o'er the world engine, lord of great machines, chooser of the slain. By my will and by my power, I bid thee rise!" As he spoke the last word, a brief but brilliant shaft of white light burst from the expanded brand on his forehead and into the sky, like lightning in reverse, and its thunder crackled across the empty sea. Fizzing slightly with a discharge of excess energy, the brand fell back to its normal configuration, its glow and that of his earring going out. And for a moment, that seemed to be all that was happening. Looking faintly puzzled, Iona gave him an inquisitive tilt of her head. Corwin smiled slightly and released her shoulders, wiping a light sweat from his brow with one forearm. "Wait for it," he said, resuming his seat and gesturing for her to do the same. "It's a long way down from here." As she sat, Iona was about to ask what was a long way down, when, a few dozen yards off the Zodiac's port bow, the sea began suddenly to boil. Or at least that's what it looked like, the surface upheaving and sliding away, as when the hot bottom mass of water begins convecting to the surface just before the onset of a good rolling boil. No bubbles, but a massive disturbance all the same, as if something enormous were forcing its way up through the sea. Until, in a tremendous geyser of spray, a vast gray and red shape lunged up through the surface, like a freight train roaring out of a tunnel, but at a near-vertical upward angle. It climbed inexorably ever higher until it towered like a strangely angled office building. Gleaming and wet, it hung suspended for a long, impossible-seeming moment, then crashed mightily down to the horizontal, hurling out a wave that made the Zodiac buck like an airplane in a storm. Iona's sea-green eyes, never particularly narrow, now went even wider than usual as she recognized the massive object, its lines as familiar to her as those of her own face. Probably more so, since long before Iona existed as the petite, silver-haired young woman now unconsciously rising back to her feet in the still-rocking Zodiac, the shape she was now looking at had been her own. A submarine, vast but sleek, her upper deck dominated by a great cylindrical structure, itself the size of some smaller subs, and an off-center conning tower. On the sides of that conning tower were painted her only markings, a number, and the flag of one of old Earth's countries. Despite the centuries she had spent on the bottom of the ocean, the vessel looked brand new, as if she had just sailed out of the finishing docks at Kure.
Ion Maruichi,
Iona murmured, her voice almost inaudible under the sound of the water cascading from the risen submarine's flanks. Then she looked up as if hearing an unexpected sound, blinking into the sky, before turning to Corwin and saying in a louder voice,
Tachyon sweep. Standard Earth Force search sensor. We've been detected.
Corwin sighed. Yep, knew that was coming, he said. All right, let's get aboard and start phase two. We don't have much time before they're doing more than just scanning. I have a message from another time. Avery Productions Unlimited presents Undocumented Features Future Imperfect, The Order of the Rose, a Duelist Opera, Cantata for Warships in D, by Benjamin D. Hutchins. Hi, that's me. And Matt Wagner. Okay, said Corwin once they reached the submarine's upper deck, just abaft the forward anti-aircraft battery. If this worked the way I wanted it to, I-401 should be primed and ready for you to take control. Iona considered that for a moment, then went and placed a hand flat against the side of the conning tower.
Understood. Establishing link.
Glowing circuit-like traces appeared on the metal, spreading out from beneath her palm. They grew and interlaced until they had nearly reached the edge of the structure, then flickered, trembling, and collapsed back to their original point of origin. Iona withdrew her hand as if she'd placed it against a hot stove, a crackle of blue energy momentarily arcing across the gap. Iona, Corwin declared, dismayed. Are you all right?
I'm not damaged,
Iona replied, regarding her hand with an air of faint surprise. Then, turning to him, she reported,
Unable to connect. This vessel already has a core intelligence on board.
Corwin frowned.
What? That can't be right. This wasn't a fog ship. This is the original I-401. Until I converted her a minute ago, she was an ordinary submarine from the 1940s. Just a machine. 7,000 tons of steel.
Iona got that distracted look again,
then said, "Energy signatures detected. Probable investigation and pursuit force making ready to leave port."
Corwin sighed again. "Yeah, I really didn't want to do this 15 miles from Pearl Harbor, but just our luck, that's where they sank her."
He pondered for a moment, then said decisively, "Okay, let's get below and find the control room. Maybe we'll get some answers there." They didn't get any answers there. Indeed, the submarine's interior appeared to contain nothing at all, not even the regular fittings and fixtures that she had contained in her first life as a conventional 20th-century naval vessel. There were just empty corridors and featureless compartments. The control room, in the heart of the ship, was a round, dome-ceilinged space, putting Corwin in mind of the bridge of a small starship, but it, too, was utterly empty. No consoles, no seats, no controls. Just bare walls and a blank floor on two levels, the rear third or so of the room 3 steps above the rest. "Right, so, if this is the control room, where's the core?" Corwin wondered. But the young woman's voice that answered him, addressing them from behind in Japanese, was not Iona's.
"Excuse me, but who are you people and why have you boarded me?"
Turning, Corwin saw the voice's owner standing in the doorway to the hallway leading aft. A girl in her mid-teens, a little taller than Iona, with a deep suntan and brown hair pulled back in a casual ponytail with a two-pronged clip. She was barefoot, dressed in what looked like an old-fashioned Japanese school swimsuit, and Corwin suspected with a sinking feeling that he knew what would be written on the name tag if she took off the abbreviated sailor blouse she wore on top of it. Iona appeared unfazed. Stepping past Corwin to approach the tanned girl, she said,
"Long-range submarine E. Yon Manoichi," pronouncing her name in its original Japanese form. "I am Captain Ravenhair's ship."
The girl in the swimsuit blinked big brown eyes at her in bafflement, advancing warily into the control room.
"But I'm long-range submarine I-401, she protested, switching to standard automatically when so addressed. "I was built in the Sasebo Naval District and fitted out in Kure."
She looked down at her hands as if just noticing that she had them.
"What in the world?"
"This must be very confusing for you," said Iona, her voice flat but not unkind, and then,
"but we have very little time. Surface and subsurface ships are approaching to investigate. You must get underway at once if we are to elude them. We would find it difficult to explain ourselves to them,"
she added with a dry understatement Corwin had to admire, even under the circumstances.
"Get underway," the tanned girl said. "But there's no one here. How am I supposed to do anything without my crew?"
Corwin palmed his face.
"Of course," he said. "Oh, Corwin, you imbecile."
"Hmm?"
both girls inquired, giving him mirrored head tilts that he would otherwise have found either charming or slightly unnerving. With a deep sigh, he looked at Iona between his fingers with one eye, telling her, "This may be a difficult life lesson for you to take on board all at once, Iona. But it turns out your god is a bit of an idiot. I'll explain the details later. Right now, she doesn't know what to do because I turned her body into a fog ship, but in her mind, she's still a World War II submarine," he went on, tapping his forehead with the index fingertips of both hands.
"Can you not talk about me like I'm not here, please?"
said I-401 in a timid voice, wringing the hem of her sailor blouse nervously. Then she flinched, looking around wide-eyed, and cried,
"Ah! What was that?"
Sensor scan, Iona replied. Your passive sensors are detecting the pursuit force.
Okay, this is bad, Corwin said. We were supposed to be long gone by this point. Iona, if you can't take control of the sub, is there some way you can, I don't know, teach her what she needs to know?
I'm not sure, Iona replied. Stand by.
What are you going to do to me?
I-401 asked fearfully, backing up a step, as Iona turned to face her.
There's no need to be afraid, Iona said. What is... I feel something weird.
The tanned girl crossed her arms protectively over her chest, hugging herself, and backed away another step.
Stop it!
What you feel is me offering you a joint tactical network uplink, Iona explained. I won't harm you, I promise.
I... said I-401 hesitantly, her eyes wide.
If you do not accept the uplink, Iona told her, the quietly matter-of-fact tone of her voice never changing, you will be unable to move, and the approaching Earth Force surface vessels will sink you again. She held out her hand and added softly, please.
I-401's eyes went still wider with dread, the whites showing all the way around. But it was a different dread than her reflexive fear of the unknown that Iona's strange talk of networks and uplinks represented. This was a much deeper, more intrinsic fear. The terror all ships, even submarines, especially submarines, feel at the prospect of sinking.
All right,
she whispered, and reached out a trembling hand to take Iona's. As she made contact, their fingers interlacing, both girls' eyes went distant and glassy, fixed on nothing visible. The only sound the tanned girl made was a quiet, startled gasp. But after a moment, Iona began to speak, the cadence of her voice even more precise, near mechanical, than usual.
Joint Tactical Network Uplink established. Submarine E, Yon Maruichi. Submarine E, Yon Maruichi Kai. Link stable. Command firmware not found. Restoring.
There was a brief pause. Corwin's Omnitool's passive mode flickered to life, showing him a communications graph. It appeared the approaching Earth Force vessels were trying to hail them. He let them eat silence, knowing full well that the standard protocols in place for unknown, unresponsive surface contacts this close to a major naval base nowadays didn't call for much of a grace period before the shooting started.
Upload complete, Iona said. Commencing system start. Thanatonium decay reactor active. Energy output nominal. Initializing wave motion compulsory conversion armor.
The lights in the compartment shifted to red as a deep vibration thrummed through the hull. If Corwin remembered the old videos he'd seen of the fog in action, that would get the Earth Force sailors' attention pretty quick, as the energy armor's activation would momentarily limn the submarine's hull in a visible halo effect. Kleinfield engaged, one of the linked mental models reported, but to Corwin's mild surprise, it was the one with the tan speaking now.
Sensor system online.
Multiple contacts bearing 025 degrees, Iona confirmed. 3 Earth Force Surface Navy warships, 1 Zhenghe class cruiser, 2 Singleton class destroyers, 5 droid submarines, Tethys class, 3 Sea Skimmer class patrol hydrofoils.
Quite a party, Corwin mumbled under his breath.
As the two I-401s resumed their now alternating litany of system status declarations, their voices progressing slowly toward synchronization, the structure of the control room began to change around them. Consoles and display panels extruded from the walls, seats unfolded from the floor, until at last the space had reconfigured into a fully operational command center, its resemblance to a starship's bridge heightened still further by the giant central hollow viewer that dominated most of the forward bulkhead.
"Graviton ballast setup commencing," said I-401.
"Weapons systems, standby, okay,"
Iona reported.
"Magnetogravitic drive systems ready," I-401 added.
"Graviton ballast setup complete," said Iona. Then they both turned to him and announced in an eerie unison,
"Submarine E Yonmaruichi Kai fully operational, Captain."
As Iona released her hand, I-401's tanned mental model blinked, then shook her head, looking vaguely stunned.
"That was strange," she said.
Then, looking at Iona, she added,
"But it didn't hurt. Thank you."
Before Iona could reply, the room shook, the sound of an impact filtering through the hull, and I-401 winced.
"Ow! That did," she said.
"Autocannon fire from the hydrofoils," Iona said. "It can't penetrate our Kleinfield."
Her eyes dilated slightly as she accessed I-401's sensors through the still-active JTN link.
"However, much of the pursuit force is armed with torpedoes, sufficiently powerful to cause a problem."
"Torpedoes?" I-401 squeaked. "I don't like torpedoes. I know that much."
Corwin went to the seat that had appeared on the little dais at the back of the room, to the left of the center console-like hump in the floor, and sat down.
"Stay calm. We can get out of this."
"Right," said I-401, sounding shaken.
"Sorry."
She sat down on the front of the floor hump and added,
"This is the first time I've ever been in a real fight, I think."
"You'll be fine," said Iona, climbing up onto the console to sit Wariza behind her, hands on her shoulders.
"Crash dive!"
Gritting her teeth, I-401 leaned forward, unconsciously miming what she wished her ship body to do. The hum of the drive system picked up a notch, and the deck took on a distinctive down angle as the vessel's graviton ballasts and diving planes drove her beneath the surface.
"I don't think I can lose them just by diving. Not at this range," I-401 said, and Corwin knew she had a point.
He could hear the Earth Force ships banging away with their active sonar through the hull, never mind the boat's hydrophones.
Iona glanced at him. He made brief eye contact with her, then smiled.
"We don't need to fool them," he said. "We can outrun them.
Ready the supercavitation drive." I-401 seemed mildly disconcerted for a moment, like a person looking up something she wasn't quite sure of in a reference book, and then nodded, her face taking on a look of determination.
"Supercavitation drive ready."
"Make your course 295 degrees.
Iona said quietly, before Corwin could make up a bearing off the top of his head.
"Roger, coming right to 295 degrees, I-401 reported.
Then, her eyes widening, she declared,
"High-speed screws! Torpedoes in the water!"
"Launch countermeasures," Corwin said at once. "Make your depth 1,500 feet.
"Countermeasures away," said I-401 automatically, and then, "Are you crazy? I'm already at my test depth, 100 meters. That's as deep as I can go."
Iona shook her head.
"You can go to 10 times that depth now," she said.
Is that even possible?"
the tanned mental model asked.
"Trust me," said Iona quietly, then added, "Trust your captain."
Okay. Descending to 450 meters.
A rippling series of detonations, muffled by distance, sounded through the hull.
"Countermeasures effective,"
Iona reported, slightly unnecessarily.
"Okay,
I don't know how I'm doing this, but... Depth 450 and holding, I-401 said after a few tense minutes. Course steady on 295.
Enemy submarines are flooding torpedo tubes for another salvo, said Iona.
Engage the supercavitation drive, Corwin ordered. All ahead flank.
All ahead flank, aye, said I-401.
Supercavitation drive coming online... now. The supercavitation drive, as its name suggested, surrounded the submarine's hull with a layer of air, which had the effect of dramatically reducing water resistance, in addition to making possible a burst of speed that was ludicrous, even by the liberal standards of what was effectively a fleet of fog submarine. This made an almighty noise and, eventually, a huge disturbance on the surface, sufficient to alert any number of nearby ships to the vessel's presence if they weren't already aware of it. On the other hand, since it also made possible a submerged sprinting rate of nearly 120 knots, that hardly mattered. They didn't elude the Earth Force sub's second torpedo spread so much as outrun it, and the entire pursuit force was left hopelessly behind in short order.
Negative pursuit, Iona declared. The hydrophones are clear.
Corwin sighed, relaxing slightly in the captain's chair. All right, reduce speed to full, he said. Secure from supercavitation.
Reduce to full, aye,
acknowledged I-401. Then she too relaxed, slumping a bit on her perch at the front of the center console.
Phew. That was intense.
You did well, said Iona. The first time with a new captain is always a strange experience.
Corwin gave her an odd look, then smiled and patted the tanned mental model's near shoulder. Good work, I-401. Blushing slightly, she replied, Thanks. Then added hesitantly,
If it's all right, you can call me Shioi. I can't remember clearly, but I think that's what my first captain called me.
That's fine with me, said Corwin. I felt a little strange calling you by a number anyway. So, now that we've got a moment to breathe, where are we headed, Iona? I'm guessing you have something in mind, given how specific the bearing you gave us was.
There is an uninhabited island approximately 1,100 nautical miles from this position, Iona replied.
Rings of colored light appeared around her, slowly rotating in opposite directions, and from the outside, Corwin could see data streaming through both of them as Iona accessed I-401's data systems. A moment later, a map, well, were it sea, I suppose it's technically a chart, thought Corwin irrelevantly, appeared in the main hollow viewer at the front of the room. Midway, Corwin said, then added with a wry smile, It would have to be, wouldn't it?
In the 21st century, the Fog Pacific Fleet maintained a repair and service depot at this location, Iona explained. I have no information as to whether anything there is still operational, but it should at least be useful as a refuge. We may also find some supplies there we can use.
Said Corwin, scratching thoughtfully at his bearded chin. Well, it's a better plan than mine, seeing as I don't have one, he said with a little smile. Then, yawning, he went on. How long will it take us to get there?
Approximately 13 hours, 45 minutes at our present speed, both mental models replied at once.
Shioi glanced a little sheepishly at Iona, then added, I don't really know what I'm doing yet, but I can divide by 80.
So that puts us there sometime around 9 o'clock tonight, Hawaii time, Corwin mused.
He yawned again, then sighed.
Guess I should get some sleep. It's been a busy morning,
And anyway, I think I'm still on Republic City time. He looked around the control room. Can we dim the lights in here at least?
I can do better than that, Iona said.
To Corwin's mild surprise, the transformation of I-401's interior that had taken place during her system startup wasn't limited to the control room. Iona now showed him that just off said room, where before there had been only a blank, featureless corridor, there was now a small but comfortably appointed stateroom, clearly intended from its proximity to the control room to be the captain's cabin. Corwin took off his shoes and lay down on the bunk built into the bulkhead opposite the door, settled down, and went almost instantly to sleep. He was already out when Iona switched off the lights and returned to the control room. Some time later, he woke, sat up, and checked his watch. Not really to his surprise, given how much energy he had expended that morning, he'd slept for nearly 12 hours, but didn't really feel rested. If they were still on course and doing I-401's full underwater speed, and based on the sameness of the near-subliminal hum of the drive systems, it seemed like the latter, at least, was the case, they'd be arriving at Midway within a couple of hours. Which meant that it was about time for him to come up with a plan of some kind, rested or not. Sighing, he rubbed his face briskly with both hands. The lights in the room clicked on.
Are you all right?
With a mild start, Corwin turned and saw Iona sitting on the built-in desk next to the door, her hand still on the light switch, regarding him with a curious, faintly concerned expression. I was, until you gave me a heart attack, he replied, and then plowed on before she had a chance to take him literally and conduct a medical scan. Have you been sitting there the whole time?
Mm-mm, she said, shaking her head. I was in the control room for most of the day. I tried to explain a few things to Shioi-chan that weren't included in the basic command firmware upload I gave her.
Corwin arched an eyebrow. Shioi-chan?
That's what she asked me to call her, replied Iona with an unperturbed shrug.
Ah, said Corwin. With another sigh, he swung his legs out of the bunk and sat on its edge, facing her, elbows on knees. I've made a complete hash of today, he said, as if apropos of nothing. I thought that reusing I-401's wreck for this would work because her spirit would be in Valhalla, beyond recall, at least at the power level I was using. And she would have been if she'd been sunk in combat, but she wasn't. She and her two sisters were surrendered to the U.S. Navy at the end of the war, and the Navy used them as torpedo targets to keep the Soviets from getting a look at them. I knew that. The implication should have been obvious. Iona said nothing, merely looked on impassively as he scrubbed his hands over his face again. But I went ahead and did it anyway, he went on at length. And now that poor soul has been dragged out of a peaceful rest and thrown into a world that must make absolutely no sense to her. And you still don't have a body. Nice job, Corwin. With a low groan, he got to his feet and finished. I guess I should at least go apologize. As she followed him back to the control room, Iona said nothing. She had a fairly good idea of what was going to happen next, but had decided that it was better to let Corwin discover it for himself. Which, as soon as he made his apology, he did.
No, no, not at all,
Shioi declared earnestly.
I'm very grateful.
Corwin gave her a puzzled look, one hand behind his head.
You are? Yes, said Shioi.
Her expression falling a bit, she went slowly on.
I don't remember very much. Just bits and pieces. Most of them are more impressions than actual memories. But
coming hesitantly nearer. She did that self-hugging gesture again, shivering despite the warmth of the control room. Wherever I was before this morning, it was cold. Cold, dark, silent, lonely. Shaking her head, she closed her eyes, tears slipping down her tanned cheeks, and whispered, "I didn't like it." With that, she came closer still, resting her loosely clenched fists in the side of her face against his chest. "Even though it's strange and confusing and there's danger, I'd rather be here. So, even if you don't want me, I'm grateful. Please, please don't send me back." Faced with this situation, Corwin did the only thing he could do. He put his arms around her, gathering her up in a hug, and just let her weep for a while. "I'd never do that," he said gently after a minute or so. "It's not that I don't want you. It's just that I didn't expect you. Now that you're here, you're very welcome." Shioi looked up at his face, her teary eyes going wide again.
You mean it?"
"Of course."
"Oh, thank you," she cried, throwing her arms around him with new tears of joy. "Thank you, Captain. I'm not very experienced, but I promise I'll do my best as part of your fleet."
"Well..." Corwin glanced at Iona, who merely stood watching the scene unfold with her usual air of unruffled equanimity, then said, "I don't really have a fleet as such, but..." Shioi might have replied to that. Clearly, with two submarines, he had at least the beginnings of a squadron. But before she could do so, she stiffened in surprise, then backed up a step and looked around as if she'd heard something. "What was that?" Iona, rather more experienced at differentiating the inputs from her mental model's senses and those of the ship, and still maintaining her low-level JTN watch over the latter, stepped in, climbing up into the place she'd occupied on the console next to the captain's seat for the Pearl Harbor engagement.
"New contact, dead ahead, range 20, she said. "Number and type unknown."
Corwin resumed his seat, his mien becoming instantly businesslike again. "All stop, rig for silent," he said, and felt the deceleration as Shioi cut her engines. From 80 knots, it would take her some time to stop, but coasting was quieter than reversing thrust.
I don't really understand these sensations yet," Shioi said apologetically, sitting down on the front of the console. "I always had a crew for things like this before."
"It's okay," Iona said, putting her hands on the other mental model's shoulders once more. "I'll be your co-processor for now."
"Have they seen us?"
Iona considered pointing out that it was unlikely anyone was seeing anything at this depth, but decided against it. She knew what he meant. Instead, she shook her head and said,
"I don't think so, but it appears they're waiting for us."
"Well, that'll be the Navy again, then," said Corwin with a resigned sigh. "I knew it was too good to hope we'd given them the slip. Even if we outran those droid subs back at Pearl, they've got a global comnet, or we don't."
Iona agreed. "They must have read our bearing when we used the supercavitation drive and deduced our destination."
Corwin shook his head, exasperated with himself once more. "Just like jumping to hyperspace," he said. "Should have cleared the area on a decoy bearing first, then corrected course. I picked a bad day to be this off my game."
I didn't think of it either,
Iona pointed out calmly. You're not the captain, Corbin replied. It's not your job.
Speed dropping off now, but we're still closing,
Iona reported, letting that fine point on the division of labor pass. Can you get a better read on them? Corbin asked.
They're very quiet, but... Yes, Iona confirmed.
Her data rings manifested again, expanding so that she and Shioi were both within their diameter, and rotated slowly as the two mental models pooled their computing power to analyze all the data coming in from the sub's hydrophones and passive quantum sensors.
Droid submarines again. Two Tethys class and two... No, three Iapetus class.
Damn, Corbin said, his voice low. They're between us and where we need to go. We could try to fake them out with another super cav sprint, but that's unlikely to work twice. These things don't have proper AIs, but they're not completely stupid. Corwin's mind raced through what he knew about the Earth Alliance's droid submarines. It wasn't a lot. Naval vessels of the 25th century were not his forte. But what little he could remember, mostly from flipping past articles about them in Jane's Fighting Ships to get to stuff he was interested in, wasn't promising. The two classes were virtually identical in most capabilities. If he remembered right, one was an updated version of the other, but he couldn't remember which was which. Either way, both were fast and highly maneuverable, and though they only had two torpedo tubes each, the weapons those tubes dispensed were self-guiding and extremely powerful. Even for an experienced fog submarine, a stand-up fight against five such droids was likely to be a pretty dicey affair, and with Shioi still figuring out what this whole two-bodies-actually-control-the-sub thing was all about, it was liable to be dicier still. All right, let's do this, he said, leaning forward slightly in his seat. Iona, give Shioi whatever support you can. Don't hold back, you two. These subs are completely automatic, no crew on board, but they're not machine life forms either. They're fairly smart for robots, but they're still only robots.
Roger, understood, said Iona. Submarine I-401, synchronizing JTN with Submarine I-401 Kai for cooperative combat enhancement. Kleinfield engaged.
What's our ordnance status? It occurred to him to ask. Be a hell of a note to find out we're unarmed, he thought.
24 conventional torpedoes on board, Shioi reported. 10 counter-torpedoes, 3 corrosive torpedoes.
Okay. Load tubes 1 through 4 with conventional torpedoes, 5 and 6 with counters, and corrosives in 7 and 8. We'll hold those tubes in reserve in case things get really dicey.
Loading.
The deck vibrated slightly beneath Corwin's feet as mechanisms elsewhere in the submarine's hull did what would have been the work of a gang of torpedo men in the original boat, preparing the 8 forward torpedo tubes for firing. Long before those men would have finished the job, Shioi reported,
All tubes ready.
Flood all tubes, open outer doors. Iona, give me a tachyon scan, please. It'll give away our position, but I want a solid starting idea of where those guys are.
Scan in progress. Tactical map generated.
Said map appeared on the forward viewer, showing the 5 flagged icons of the Earth Force droid subs arrayed in a textbook blockade formation opposite the lone blip that represented I-401.
Mechanical transients. Targets are flooding their torpedo tubes. Shioi reported, sounding tense but far less rattled than she had at the prospect of torpedoes back at Pearl. She glanced at Corwin and offered him a slightly wan smile.
I think I'm getting the hang of being my own sonar man, she said. Good, Corwin replied, nodding. Just don't get distracted from driving.
Right, said Shioi with a determined nod. I'll do my best.
Corwin spared a moment to give her an encouraging smile. Even if she was still feeling her way into the complicated task of existing, she seemed much more confident now that she'd been assured she wasn't an unwanted complication. Probably a lesson in that, he thought, and then he had no time to consider anything but the tactical picture, as his mind compiled a model of what they were up against. It wasn't really that different from space combat, he realized. The scale was smaller, but the lesser distances were balanced by the lower speeds, so that, relatively speaking, it was all more or less the same to the human mind. He made a mental note to mention that to Utrina the next time he saw her. Of course, in order for that to happen, he had to ensure there was a next time he saw her. Come left to course 240, all ahead 3/4, he ordered. Make your depth 400. All ahead 3/4, aye, Shioi acknowledged. Coming left to 240. Enemy units moving to engage, Iona reported. Then, her eyes narrowing a tiny bit, she said in a fractionally more urgent tone, incoming fire. Full spread, 10 torpedoes. Impact in 30 seconds. Evasive maneuvers, Corwin ordered. Come right to 340. Maintain depth. Increase to full. Shioi blinked. She knew that course change would take them directly into the incoming torpedo spread, but said nothing, only set herself to the task. I-401's hull thrummed with the increased propulsion power as her magnetogravitic drive pushed her nearer to the greatest speed she could manage, through water undisturbed by supercavitation. Stand by tube 5, said Corwin. Match bearing. He watched the course projection swing across the tactical plot, timing their next move, then called. Fire 5. Make your depth 550. Deploy countermeasures. Between the unexpected shrinkage of range caused by their turn toward the enemy, the multiple mini-warheads of the counter-torpedo, the sudden dive, and the masking effect of the countermeasure pods, they destroyed or confounded a full 9 of the 10 incoming torpedoes. The 10th scored a glancing hit, causing the boat to shake and Shioi to wince. Damage report, Corwin said. No damage, Iona reported. Kleinfield is holding at 74%. She glanced at him and added with a very faint trace of wry humor, modern torpedoes appear to be more of a threat than their 21st century ancestors. Let's just hope even Earthdome isn't crazy enough to start reissuing nukes, Corwin replied grimly. All right, let's see if we can confuse them. Give me a zig to port and head for periscope depth. While you're at it, one of you see if you can get a decent firing solution on any of these guys. I have a shot at target J5, Shioi reported. Tubes 1 and 3 will bear in 7 seconds if we hold our present turn. Steady on, then. Fire as they bear. Roger. Fire 1. Fire 3. I have torpedo guidance, Iona cut in. Impact in 20 seconds. Now we find out what kind of reload time an Earth Force drone sub has, Corwin observed, mostly to himself. A few seconds later, a pair of dull, far-off crumps announced the detonation of first one, then the other torpedo. Iona blinked, then said dispassionately as one of the target icons on the tactical plot went red and winked out, direct hits. Target J5 destroyed. Good shooting, you two, Corwin said. But before he could articulate their next step, Shioi cried, new contact bearing 094. Surface vessel, type unknown, approaching at 30 knots, range 4 kilometers. Incoming fire, targets T1, T2, J4, Iona put in. 20 seconds to impact. Should I take us back down? Shioi asked. No time, Corwin said. Keep heading up. And let's hope that surface contact isn't another Earth Force destroyer, he added silently. Then commanded aloud,
Launch countermeasures. Hard a port. Bow thrusters full.
Aye, aye, Captain, Shioi replied.
She launched another pair of countermeasure pods, waited for them to take effect, and then fired her starboard bow thrusters, hurling herself into a turn to port that would have been ludicrous in her original incarnation. Would, in fact, probably have torn her steel hull apart if she'd even had propulsion systems capable of performing the maneuver in the first place. She had to admit, if only in the privacy of her own mind, that however strange her new form was, the sense of power, of capability it brought with it was nice. The countermeasures and violent turn dealt with 4 of the 6 incoming shots, but the remaining 2 hit much harder than the first. Shioi cried out in surprise and pain as the twin explosions, coming within milliseconds of each other, overwhelmed her Kleinfield and crashed against her armor.
Kleinfield overload, reinitializing, Iona said, as calm as if she'd been reporting on the weather.
30 seconds to activation. Minor outer hull damage.
I'm okay, Shioi said, shaking her head as if shrugging off a punch.
All right, so where the hell is that... Ah, crap, said Corwin, as, a bit belatedly, he realized that their radical turn had brought them square into the sights of the other remaining Iapetus, exactly as the droid sub's tactical projection software had anticipated. At this range, there was the chance the enemy torpedoes wouldn't arm before they arrived. There was also the chance that their own counter-torpedo wouldn't have time to separate and acquire. It was probably all going to come down to which sub had the quicker virtual trigger finger.
New contacts! Torpedoes in the water! Shioi cried, looking startled. Supercavitation sounds bearing directly astern target J3!
On the tactical plot, target J3's icon was suddenly surrounded by a blinking red icon shaped a bit like a gear wheel. This pulsed for a couple of seconds, then went out, taking the target icon with it.
What just happened? Corwin wondered.
Corrosive torpedo detonation bearing 262, Iona replied dispassionately. Target J3 destroyed. Within moments, targets T1 and J5 also flashed red, then disappeared, though from the sound of it they'd been dispatched with regular explosives. That left only T2, which turned and tried to make a run for it, but that was hopeless. Even a 25th century droid sub couldn't outrun a fog torpedo, corrosive or otherwise. A dead-on snapshot by Shioi nailed it before it could even reach full speed.
All hostiles destroyed, Shioi reported, then added with an uncertain lip bite.
I think. I still have that surface contact, and based on what happened to J3, I'm pretty sure there must be another submarine out there, but I can't hear anything.
Kleinfield re-engaged, Iona put in.
Well, that'll buy us a little breathing room anyway, Corwin mused. Let's finish getting to periscope depth and see what's what. What was what turned out to be a surface ship, just as Shioi had reported. This was Hove 2, a half mile or so away from their position, and the feed from I-401's periscope showed her clearly on the main viewer. Indubitably a warship, but of a starkly antiquated type. 3 smokestacks and a line amidships, no central superstructure, with a shortish bridge tower most of the way forward. She lacked even proper gun turrets, as later naval architects understood them, carrying her guns instead in single, swiveling mounts. Most strikingly, however, she was a deep violet color, with streaks and slashes of lighter purple crisscrossing her hull and her bridge windows glowing the same, the visual hallmarks of a ship of the Fleet of Fog. Iona, what do you make of this? Corwin wondered.
10 Ryu class light cruiser, 10 Ryu, Iona replied at once. Displacement 4,000 tons. Wave motion compulsory conversion armor.
4 5.5-inch 50-caliber guns and single turrets, 1 3-inch secondary gun, 6 21-inch deck-mounted torpedo tubes. She has 2 twin-mount anti-aircraft lasers and the usual assortment of modular missile arrays and close combat systems. No submersion capability. Maximum speed 55 knots. Obsolete at the time of the original war. Threat level, minimal.
Minimal? Shioi wondered. She just wiped out 2 of those droid subs with hardly any effort at all.
Surprise attack, Iona said, shaking her head. We can both outrun and outgun Tenryu, and our wave force armor is stronger than hers. Before Shioi could respond, Iona went on. She's signaling.
Well, I guess we might as well hear what she has to say, Corwin said.
Establishing hyperwave audio link, Iona acknowledged, and a moment later, a voice-only comm icon labeled Tenryu appeared on the monitor.
Ahoy there, said a young-sounding woman's voice. She sounded cheerful, even exhilarated, but also a trifle suspicious as she went on. I'm reading you as a friendly submarine, but I'm having a hard time figuring out which one. Something weird with your IFF signature. You mind identifying yourself?
Iona glanced at Corwin, received a nod, and replied, Long-range submarine I-401.
401? Huh. I thought you were scrapped, Tenryu said.
The situation is complicated, Iona said carefully. We require shelter and resupply. Is Midway operational?
After a fashion, replied Tenryu. We, huh? Okay, I'm officially intrigued, and since I'm the ranking operational ship in the sector right now, I guess it's my call.